Hi, everyone. A recent study reported an EdSurge analyzed communication between teachers and parents on a school communication platform that was from a nonprofit. An AI-assisted analysis of over 40 million messages on the platform showed that while the vast majority of those messages between teachers and parents were effective, they were really focused on things like logistics and what was called standard replies. Messages about academics, homework, attendance, participation, and behavior accounted for single-digit percentages. Many schools use parent-teacher conferences still, but that's something that's been around literally since I was a child and probably my parents as well. I think that a lot of districts are really trying to figure out what are the ways that we can have the best and most effective communication between our teaching faculty, our administrators, and our parents so that everyone is working together. That's what we'll be talking about on today's Teaching Matters podcast.
Welcome to Teaching Matters, a podcast exploring all things teaching and learning. Teaching Matters is produced by NPR affiliate WOUB Public Media in Athens, Ohio. And here is your host, Dr. Scott Titsworth, Dean of the Scripps College of Communication at Ohio University.
Thanks so much, Trinity. Joining me today is Tom Lizzie. He's the superintendent of Oak Ridge Public Schools in Muskegon, Michigan. Tom is a graduate of Michigan State University and has served for over 20 years as an educator and administrator. He's been superintendent at Oak Ridge for 17 years. During the 25-26 academic year, Tom has been elected as president of the Michigan Association of Superintendents and Administrators. Tom, it's great to meet you and it's great to have you on the podcast. Thanks so much for your time today.
Hey. Appreciate being here, and I enjoy telling my story.
Yeah. Well, let's start with that. I enjoyed reading the bio that you have on your district's website. Can you talk a little bit about your background and what got you into education and administration? You've had a 17-year run as superintendent there. That's a long time. So how did you get from, where you were to where you're at now?
Boy, going back, that's quite some time ago. But so I'm a first-generation college graduate in my family, so I consider myself blessed to be able to do what I am able to do. But my biggest influences in my life, besides my own family, were the teachers that I had. I was blessed to go K through 12 through Vicksburg Community Schools here in Michigan, and I can literally name every single teacher that I had through elementary and my college coaches. I was an athlete in high school, three-sport athlete, and they all encouraged me to go on to pursue my athletic career in college. And so that was my ticket to an education, was sports and the extracurriculars, and fully believe in all of that. But I went to education because I wanted to continue that trend. I wanted a coach like the coaches in my life. A strange thing that I've never coached a day in my life since I got an education. I first found out that teaching's pretty hard, and you get into that teaching profession, and I wasn't able to coach because it was so hard to be a teacher. And I went on to get my master's degree and ended up teaching for, I think, 6 to 7 years, structural technology specialist, assistant principal. I was an adjunct professor at Grand Valley State University for a bit. I became a curriculum director here at Oak Ridge for a few years before they asked me to transition into the superintendency, and that's now been 17 years ago that I've been in this position in this district, and it's been a true honor to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit about your school district and then also, sort of the Muskegon community? What's it like?
Sure. Well, first of all, I've been working in high-needs districts my entire career. So Godwin Heights is inner city just outside of Grand Rapids, Michigan. Had a third of my kids did not speak English as their first language in my classroom when I was teaching. Transitioning that to Oak Ridge, where we're on the, it's hard to say that it's a suburb of Muskegon, but it's about 80% free and reduced rate when we had that. This community qualifies for the community eligibility provision, so we get free breakfast, free lunch through federal funds for all of our kids. We've got Boys and Girls Club partnerships for after-school programs and summer programming, so great community, very tight-knit community, high needs. We have the lowest taxable, we have one of the lowest taxable value per pupil in the entire state of Michigan. We're in the bottom 5%. So everything that we do, we have to fight and claw for the resources that we need to educate our kids and trying to get the partnerships with our local legislators. So, yeah, that's a little bit about Oak Ridge and the background and the kids and the community that that we serve.
So in 2022, I read that your board approved a new strategic plan for the district. And one of the pillars, there are five pillars in the plan, one of those pillars was focused on parent, caregiver, community. Can you talk a little bit about why that pillar emerged as being so important for your district at that time when the plan was created? You know, what were the conditions that you had observed and that your board had observed to really highlight that?
Well, we are on Eagle Strategic Plan 3.0. Every 3 to 5 years, we renew that thing and reassess the needs of the district. And yes, I'm so glad that you noticed that. That is a significant priority. I've served under 35 board members since I've been here at Oak Ridge, and that is a common theme, that parent engagement is a top priority, and they want parents to be in charge of their kids' education, and we are a partner to the parents in trying to provide the resources and the tools for them to pursue the careers that they want to do once they're out of high school. So yeah, parent engagement, making sure that they're true partners is a high priority for this Board of Education.
You being in your role for, you know, 17 years now, you're sort of like me in my role where, you know, the world has changed a lot, you know, from the day that we stepped into our seat until, you know, where we're at right now. So as superintendent, if you just think about the idea of communication with parents, how have you, I mean, we're going to delve into what you're doing right now in depth, but how have you seen that evolve over the 17 years that you've been superintendent? I mean, you know, you probably started when websites were somewhat nascent, and, you know, things have evolved a lot since then.
Boy, I look back over the years, yes, we used to have a district newsletter that we would actually pay postage stamps for and spend a lot of money printing those things, having to prepare those things 2 months in advance in order to get to mailboxes on time. I am the one, so full disclosure, I was an instructional technology specialist for a brief period of my career, and those kinds of things come easy to me, but I am the one that literally created our first website. I was the one to subscribe to Facebook for the first time, and now we're up to over 5,000 followers on that. TikTok, another tool that is recent that has gotten some attention. Twitter has come and gone for us, but YouTube channel is also another channel. We have a platform called Blooms for interactions with our parents. So all of those tools have evolved. We've used a number of tools over the years, but going from a print-based to a digital-based, and not just distributing, but actually communicating two-way, that's been a key aspect for us to try to truly engage, not just at the superintendent level, but at the classroom level as well, is giving teachers the tools to interact with the parents so that we can build trust, build relationships, and make sure that they feel supported.
When I think about my own personal communication tools, you know, and I think all of us are sort of like this. I mean, we've got the daily inflow of email that could number in the hundreds. We have text messages. We have Teams messages. We have social media. We have the academic platform, whatever it might be, you know, in a university or a district where messages can come through. Point I'm making is that we have so many communication tools, and that's true for parents as well, that it is sort of overwhelming, you know, to be able to think about, you know, where to find a message that you need. What are some of the steps that your district is taking to help, you know, the teachers in your district, the administrators, and then also the parents and students sort of make sense of this ecosystem of communication tools?
Well, it certainly has evolved over the years, and you've learned some of the things that we have. And I'll give you an example that as all these tools are coming out, you find, hey, this is really neat. Let's try that. And then you'd reflect after you've adopted some of these tools that, man, parents are getting this information from this app, another piece of information from another app, and go to our website for this, go to our social media for that. And we're hitting them from so many different directions. We have tried to simplify that a little bit so that there's fewer access points to have. I don't know that we'll ever get to a single access point because people live in different digital communities, I'll call them. But that's one thing that I can reflect on, that we need to make sure parents know where to access the information that they need, and make sure it's consistent and reliable so that they can be informed about what's happening in the school district. I could go into great detail on all of those things, but generally that's been a discovery for me personally and for our district that I'll just give an example. If there's a family of three and we've got five buildings in the district and they've got a kid in three of those buildings, teacher one might use one tool, teacher two might use another tool, and teacher three, and then that's tripling the amount of access points that a single parent has to manage their own children. So we've consolidated that where we've got one tool. We happen to use a tool called Blooms right now that rosters all the kids, and teachers can communicate two-way with all of their parents with a single click of the button, or they can filter it down to certain groups or hours of the day. But just making it easy on the teacher as well as the parent, that having one app for all three of their kids. And there's some families with five or six kids. And so just try to imagine if every teacher used a different tool, how inconvenient that would be for parents. So that's just one example where I think we've learned to be parent friendly and work together as a district to simplify and reduce the number of access points for parents and teachers.
The Blooms app that you're using, I was looking a little bit about that. I thought it was interesting that you also provided access to that app for community members who maybe do not necessarily have students in your district at the current moment.
That's true. That is true. They can subscribe on our website. We'll add them to the database, and then we can communicate to community members who may not have a child in the district. Mm-hmm.
So as you reflect on the progress you've made since you enacted your Oak Ridge strategic plan, what are the core things that you're really focusing on? I mean, you talked about sort of the technology platforms, but I assume it's a broader strategy than just knowing what app to use.
Yeah. So I like to reference Jamie Vollmer's book called Schools Can't Do It Alone. And in chapter 14, in fact, I just looked it up before I hopped on because it's one of those things that I just gravitate towards quite often. But he calls it the prerequisites of progress. And he lists four things. And I think the first one is the preeminent one that we all as public schools need to work towards. And that's community understanding. If the community doesn't understand what you're doing and the positive things that you're doing, they're not going to trust, which is number two. If they don't trust, they're not going to give you permission to make progress as a district. And if they don't give you permission, they're never going to give you the support that they need, which is number four. So those four things, community understanding, community trust, in order to get permission and support, you've got to build that understanding and trust before permission and support is going to come. And that doesn't matter, whatever tool you use, it doesn't have to be the tools that we use, but that's the foundation of what we're trying to accomplish, is community understanding at the base.
What are some of the points that you're really trying to emphasize right now about your district to sort of build that understanding and start to build that trust?
Yeah, so we've got a few priorities right now. In fact, I'm excited next Monday I'm going to launch. We've got a campaign called the Show Up Campaign. And Show Up is about getting kids to show up to school. We've reduced our chronic absenteeism from 42% down to 28% last year, and we're riding about 25% right now. So we're trying to reduce that chronic absenteeism. But our Show Up campaign, we've challenged another school district that borders us to see who can reduce their chronic absenteeism the most. And on Monday, I'm releasing 40 days of posts, I'll call them, where I've taken a picture of a kid and they've told me what do they want to do when they grow up. And we took AI to turn the kid into 20 years older and into that career that they wanted. So, for example, I did one. I said, I'm Tom Livesey. When I grow up, or I show up because I want to be a video game creator and create learning experiences for kids. And so, so on Monday, oakridgeschools.org/showup is where we're going to release all of these videos one at a time. And that's just a creative, fun way to promote the kids. And I got the 40 highest attending kids that we did this with. And we're going to release these videos to encourage our students that, hey, when you show up, this is what you're going to become and you're going to be successful. And so attendance is a top priority that we're using communication in a very fun way. We're going to be putting on TikTok, Facebook, on our website, and just trying to build a culture of kids who show up to school. So that's one example. Many other things that we're doing, but that's a fun one that I'm pretty proud of and excited to release very soon.
Yeah, that is really fun about the way that you're being creative about, you know, sort of portraying the students in their own voice, but yes, letting them see a future version of themselves.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm excited about it.
When you're trying to think about the messages that go, you know, from teachers to families and then back and forth, what type of work have you and your principals done, you know, to sort of, you know, help teachers think about the substance of that message? The stats that I was quoting at the beginning of the podcast, that in a typical educational environment, a lot of the messages are more transactional about, you know, knowing what's going on and what's happening, not so much about academics and that sort of thing. I don't say that to blame anyone, but it is a fact. I mean, even with my own communication, I do a lot of transactional stuff. What do you do with your faculty to try to help them envision ways that they can change the way that they communicate with parents, not from a technical sense, but from a substantive sense?
Yeah. So I'm going to use one of my teacher's words to answer that question. So I have on my screen an email that came from one of my staff members maybe about 6 weeks ago, unsolicited. And she says, hey, this tool is the most amazing app. She was referring to the Bloom's tool at the time. Having access to parents set to send pictures and updates in a second is such a great tool. I sat here tonight sharing pictures and communicating with parents about their children trying and loving the yellow string beans as part of our grant that we received for fruits and vegetables. She goes on to describe things. So while I do agree that often communication is transactional, this is an example of a relationship that's being built around activities and trying to promote wellness and actually being able to not just send a few, hey, this is what we're doing. Please get your homework turned in. They're actually talking about teaching and learning through this communication. And so, of course, this came to me through an email about a tool that she used through an app, but excited about what she's doing to partner, which goes back to what are we developing understanding and trust, permission and support. This all goes into that effort. So. Mm-hmm.
Are there other, you know, sort of anecdotal or even substantive evidence of success that you've seen as you've, you know, sort of focused on this topic of community building over the last couple of years?
Yeah, I think I'm going to, so this literally just happened to me yesterday. I get another email from a parent in the community, and she says, hey, as my child's senior year winds down, I want to send you a message personally thanking you for your efforts during my child's time at Oak Ridge Schools. You've been incredibly responsive and available when we've had issues, as well as incredibly in front of any potential issues and communicating them with everyone. It's nice to know what's going on in the district and what is the actual truth. She goes on to explain all of that. Unsolicited email coming from a family member that I just made my day literally yesterday. And so our tools, our strategies working. Mm-hmm. There's one example that it's working at least for one parent. And I hope that there's more out there. But what better evidence than an unsolicited compliment to a superintendent in a small district that, hey, you're doing some good things in public education. Keep up the good work. We got you.
Yeah. So you brought up the topic of chronic absenteeism, and certainly there are other issues that communication is so vital to besides just being in school. But we know that chronic absenteeism is sort of an issue that faces every district to some degree or another, and everyone's trying to improve that. If you were talking, and I know that you do consult with other schools, if you were talking to other superintendents and they said, look, you know, Tom, I've got to figure out a way to get my students into the classroom, to get communication more robust between faculty or teachers and parents, where do I start? You know, what would be your advice for sort of biting off pieces of the apple to start moving down the road of sort of building that culture that you described?
Absolutely. I think step number one, you have to give employees, primarily teachers, the tools that they need to communicate with the families. And that comes through a number of different forms. We're not ever going to take our Google Gmail accounts away. I mean, that's a pretty standard way of doing communication. The Blooms app I told you about, but we've got some other tools that have online learning environments and ways to interact with the content and the way that we communicate through the platforms and things like that. But I think I already said, the more tools you have, the more training and people, more time that you have to train people. And so trying to consolidate those tools into a few effective tools, you'll never get down to just one, in my opinion. I know that there's vendors out there that are trying to be the super app for everybody. But there's just too many avenues and places in the digital communities that are out there that you have to access parents where they're at, mm-hmm. but also be efficient at making sure that the information is getting where it needs to go. But you can't build partnership without two-way communication. So those tools do have to be two-way communication ways of communicating. So those are a couple things that I would advise is putting the tools in teachers' hands, training them on utilizing those tools, consolidating the number of tools so they have fewer things to learn. That's what you're going to help develop understanding, trust, permission, and support with in any community.
In terms of, so I want to go back to parent-teacher conferences. I know that, you know, that's something that's still part of culture of nearly every district that I know of. Yep. Have you given thought to what the future of parent-teacher conferences are? And I don't say that in the context that we shouldn't have them. I think parents need to be in schools and talking to teachers. But I also remember, like with my daughter, you know, 10 years ago when we went in, especially when middle school started, and the teachers kind of looked at you like, "What? Why are you in here? You know, you got a good kid. Why are you in here?" And Emma and I, and then one of our colleagues that's a coach with us, we've talked about this actually quite a bit because they're all doing parent-teacher conferences right now in Athens and the surrounding districts. What do you think the future of that is? Because there are so many communication tools. It's personalized, you know, like through your app. And you know, you can talk to individuals or, you know, conveniently entire classrooms and parents associated with the students. What do you think the role of getting families into the building, having relationship building discussions with teachers are? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so just reflecting on how we've tried a few different methods over the years, but how we're currently doing things and what our current beliefs are, that we've purposely scheduled our parent-teacher conferences during the middle of marking periods instead of the end. We want to have, when we do get to parent-teacher conferences, we want to have that relational conversation about that partnership, not just about what's on the report card. And so the conversation is less because they have access to that information every single day. They don't need to know what the grades are, what their attendance are. That's coming with the digital access that we give them. That relational aspect of parent-teacher conferences is a key priority. We've also have virtual opportunities. And so we're seeing a gravitation towards some parents wanting to access virtual. And we've had to adapt our ways of how do people sign up for these things. You can't just come during the 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock scheduled times and wait for your turn outside the door. you're going to have to show up at a specific time to log on and have access to the teacher through the digital environment that we provide. So that has helped out. We still see elementary have high parent engagement in the 90 to 100% of elementary aged student parents show up for parent-teacher conferences, and secondary typically drops below 50% just because the kids are growing up and they have access to everything. If your kid's getting straight A's, we still want to see parents. We still love to compliment parents and the good work that they do, but probably don't need as lengthy of a conversation. That's the kids that are struggling that we would like to increase the communication and partnership to see if we can get them towards higher levels of success. So, just a few things that have evolved over the years that who would have thought before the pandemic that we'd have Zoom or Google Meet parent-teacher conferences scheduled. It just wouldn't have happened prior to that. So, really excited about how we're doing things and the help that it's being to partner with parents and getting them the information they need about how their student's performing.
Yeah, certainly it opens up opportunities, for some parents to be able to join. I've even noticed, so in my college at Ohio University, we have student success advisors we would have called counselors back in the day. And there are definitely a population of students who prefer to do virtual advising appointments with them, even though it's very convenient for them to stop by as they're coming in the building. And I do think that's an interesting byproduct of what we all went through in COVID and sort of learned, ways that we can use this type of a digital interaction, effectively and still build relationships. And so I agree with you. I think that's an interesting perspective. I think the last question that I want to ask you is actually not about what we've been talking about, but I was reading in your bio and noted the fact that you do consult with other districts, and you mentioned Alaska. So I got to hear the story behind that.
So there's about a 7-year period. I traveled to over 100 school districts across the country, and that particular August, I was literally in Maine, Florida, Arizona, and Alaska within 3 weeks, so all four corners of the country. So it took me 4 flights to get there, but I was in Point Hope, Alaska, and the topic, this is literally a town in the middle of, it's a Nupiak Eskimo community. The airport was a strip of pavement in the middle of the tundra with a pickup truck at the end of the pavement. And so that was the airport with a guy flagging me down to say, hey, come with me. So I literally stayed in the closet of the school for 7 days because there were no restaurants, there were no hotels. And I helped that community of educators in the Point Hope, Alaska. It's the point that's closest to Russia, if you can picture that. Mm-hmm. And so lo and behold, education has happened in the middle of nowhere in Alaska, and it was a high tech, just as normal of a school as in my backyard here, that kids and teachers are teaching and learning, and I was helping them with database school improvement, how to use data to improve instruction, and I could go on for stories about what I learned about that culture and stuff. Yeah. But yeah, what an experience to go to a native Eskimo, Inupiaq Eskimo community and help them with teaching and learning just like we do here in Muskegon.
Yeah, that had to be a life-changing experience in some level.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Yeah. Last question. I want you to be able to brag a little bit about your district. As you think about, where you're at right now, what are some of the pride points that you have on what you and your staff and your students and families have accomplished?
Boy, thank you. I already talked about one. The high poverty community and trying to get people to understand the importance is you got to be here to learn here. And the response that our community with helping us reduce our chronic absenteeism, I couldn't be more proud. Our educators, they work so incredibly hard under really difficult circumstances. And to see what they are doing and the systems that we are creating all around responding to kids' needs, both mental, academic, medical. We've been able to install a full-fledged medical dental facility right inside of our school. We provide after-school programs, summer programs. What? I get tired of saying doing more with less, because I'd love to do more with more. Mm-hmm. But we're doing an outstanding job educating kids. And while it's difficult at times, when I get those emails that I shared with you earlier in the podcast, that is impact. Mm-hmm. And to know that those same messages are going to our educators, because we got that two-way communication. I mean, superintendents are not typically the ones that get all the compliments. You defer credit to staff, and you take blame when somebody has done something that perhaps needs blame. But I'm so proud of the community, the parents who have the courage to reach out, the educators who reach out to the parents. We're doing great things in public education, specifically here at Oak Ridge Public Schools, and I could not be more proud of my staff who partners with me and our parents to accomplish all that. So thanks for the opportunity to brag on them for a little bit.
Absolutely. I think we all need to hear the positive stories that goes on every day, you know, across the country in buildings where students' lives are being changed. And thank you, you know, for obviously the work that you've done as an administrator and a member of your school district to really try to affect change in a positive way. It's a great story to tell.
Thank you so much.
My guest today has been Tom Livesey. He's the superintendent of Oak Ridge Public Schools in Muskegon, Michigan. If you want to learn more about some of the things we've been talking about, I'll have a link to the Oak Ridge Public Schools district website in the text accompanying the podcast. And you can learn more about the Bloom's communication tool, the district's strategic plan, and more about the school in general. It's a great website to check out. Thanks, everyone, for listening today and watching if you're on YouTube. Also, thanks to April Koska and Trinity Sweet for their work behind the scenes to make this podcast what it is. If you would like to reach out with ideas or suggestions, don't hesitate. Just email us at teachingmatterspodcast@ohio.edu, teachingmatterspodcast@ohio.edu, all lowercase and all one word. Thanks for your time, and we hope everyone has a great day.